On September 1st, I remember I opened TechCrunch and I saw our company and Zamir's interview. And it was
Nice.
really a satisfying moment, I would say, for me. It's like looking for an investor. You're pitching your project to many investors, and out of, I don't know, 50 no's, you get this one yes that you've been looking for. The same approach, I think, with a journalist.
Now, I've recently fallen in love with platform specialists. And what I mean by that is platform heads and leads who are extremely good at doing one thing, and they use their decade of experience in that one thing to support their portfolio companies at the VC fund. On the pod today, I had the pleasure of sitting down with Galina Dremova from Vibranium VC, whose specialty is communications and media relations. And on our episode today, we really dive into specifics, and I asked her for tips on how exactly founders should approach journalists to get the coverage that they desire. I've been meaning to get her on the pod for a very long time, and I finally got to. So I really hope you enjoy the episode. Galina, super, super happy to have you on. I know you go on vacation very shortly, and I caught you right before that. So this is a great time to be here with you.
Hi, Mash. Nice to see you.
Yeah, to finally do this after so many weeks. So, Galina, to give the audience a brief intro about who you are, tell us what you're up to, where you're based, and just give us a brief intro.
Okay, so maybe I should start a little bit with my background
Yeah, background.
and what I'm doing right now. So at the moment, I am leading communications at Vibranium Venture Capital Fund. It's a Silicon Valley-based fund. We invest in seed startups, SaaS startups, basically.
Yeah.
And I'm just dealing with all the external communications, communicating with startups, communicating with journalists on various topics, So that's where I am right now. And it's very interesting part of my life at the moment because I've been in innovations for the past 6 or 7 years, and venture was something that I think was naturally coming into my life. So I'm really happy at what I'm doing now. It's very interesting field. Challenging for sure, but interesting.
Yeah, and I think there's a there's a certain vibe almost with whenever I speak with funds that are smaller than $100 million. There's these are small teams, and people there are very connected to each other, and they're very connected to the purpose and the mission of what they're doing. And when we spoke offline last time, I sensed a lot of that from you. So I'm very happy I get to share that with the audience today. But Galina, you weren't always in venture capital, right? I believe you've been with Vibranium for the last 2 years-ish. So before
One year
that,
and a half,
one year and a half, 1 year, okay. So before that, you were leading innovations, communications, and public relations, right? But how did you get into venture? And like, what was that journey like coming from a non-VC space to a VC space?
So first, I want to highlight something that you mentioned about the team. Yes, we are a small fund and we have not a big team. But what is very important that we do have this vibe. I guess when you choose people in your team, you try to search for someone who's matching your DNA, like business-wise, that they have the same values, the same approach, they're open-minded. And I think to be open-minded in venture capital is very important because sometimes you have to think out of the box. Of course, you have some rules that you have to follow, but it's very important to create a team that is following common goal. We always stress that to startups, the team is very important. So for us, also team is very important. So it's number one that I wanted to highlight. And about my, let's do professional journey. I used to work in many companies, international, and one of my longest one was Enel Group. It was power company. I started in press office, then I naturally moved to Innovation Hub because I was covering mostly news on innovations and new projects that our company does and just all the innovative projects we work with, invest and stuff like that. I was working there, then I moved to, like, it was another step for me. I moved to Corporate Accelerator. So I had to learn from the inside how big companies actually work with startups, what kind of formats they use. Is it like a open innovation approach, or they try and create a product inside their company using the ideas of their employees and programs that will facilitate employees creating something new that can be scaled later on. So it was a valuable experience for me also. For 3 years, I used to work there. And then this just opportunity came and I decided, why not? Because for me, I always loved to work with startups. I have this, I don't know, I know that create something from scratch, create something that you think might change something, like the field, industry, the world. I know it sounds like a very big thing, but still, you know, because when you're creating something, you have in mind, okay, I want to improve something, I want to make something better or something work faster. Or I don't know, I want this ecological problem to be solved because of my company. And you have this big goal in mind. And I always admire those people because I know that it takes effort, patience, a lot of, I don't know, your stress cells, you can call them like that, you know, to create something. And you have to believe in that. And it takes a lot of effort to search for investors, to search for partners, to search for your team. So I always loved working with founders, and I'm happy that I had an opportunity and I still have an opportunity to meet so many great people with the brilliant ideas and startups.
So,
Sure.
seems like throughout your life, you've worked with teams and companies, and innovation was a core thing that attracted you to the different teams that you worked with. What's your north? What's your personal North Star? Like, what do you look for when you're working with, whether it's startups or investors or companies or corporations? What do you personally look for? And I'll tell you what I look for. When I look for people to partner up with or work with, I look for two things. On the personal side, I look for people that I can be myself with, be authentic with, you know, drop the act and just be, you know, human to human. That's the first thing I look for. The second thing I look for is what you mentioned, funny enough, which was the ambition and the drive to create something from nothing, to do whatever you can, bring the right people, resources, and tools into the room so you can actually build something that'll benefit yourself as well as people around you. That's what I look for when I try to work with people. What do you personally look for, Galina, in your everyday life?
Very interesting. When it comes to my job, of course, right? Well, first of all, if I limit myself with communications, when I work with startups or communicate with them, I really looking for them to be more open-minded and not to be afraid to test something because when you're working, for example, you try to create a story, you try to pitch to a journalist a very interesting story, as you think. I mean, of course, it's interesting and it came from the startup. Of course, they think it's interesting. So you try to create something that might be also be that interesting for the journalist. And sometimes it's not working the way you think it would. Sometimes you get many no's if you're lucky to even get an answer. And of course, you know, some of the founders, they are a little bit upset that, okay, they gave a comment, they, you know, invested their time and there's like no outcome. And I always try to tell them that it's like looking for an investor. You're pitching your project to many investors, you know, and out of, I don't know, 50 no's, you get this one yes that you've been looking for. The same approach, I think, with the journalist. And I always tell them just try to lower your expectations a little bit because there is no guarantee that something will be published, you know. And I want them not to be upset because it doesn't mean that their, you know, news are not valuable or it's not interesting. It's still interesting and valuable. It just might not be in the scope of interest of that particular journalist at that particular time. So, yeah,
Great
I
point.
want them to be very open-minded and, you know, see that there are so many different channels that they can use to, I don't know, broadcast what is happening in their startup. So, yeah,
That's a great
that's great.
point. And the reason I like that very much, Galina, is because it comes back down to the soul of a founder. Try a lot of things, keep doing, keep trying till you get that one yes, and then use that yes to again improve. But then you get one yes, doesn't mean you'll never find another no. You're gonna get a bunch of no's afterwards, but it's really iterating towards perfection. That's how I see it.
Yeah.
And so
yes,
you know, I know we'll dive into your about your fund a little bit here, but I'm really curious. So you come from that innovation and communications and public relations background, Galina.
Mm-hmm.
How do you find that those skill sets today help you support your fund and help you support your founders? I think you mentioned media exposure is something that you're very passionate with and very good at, and you help your founders with that. What are some other elements that you have found that you're super helpful with when it comes to supporting your fund?
It depends on the stage. So if we talk about startups, a seed stage or pre-seed, they don't really often have a PR team.
Yeah.
So sometimes they have one person who's covering marketing and PR, and it can be very stressful. And of course, they focused on selling their product, not on promoting and creating this, you know, image, not really focused on the perception of their brand, if you know what I mean.
I do.
When I see something like interesting frameworks, or I see any, for example, media opportunities that it will be better if their PR team will take care of, I always send it via emails like, hi guys, check it out. Or this award is really interesting. You should apply. Let me know if you need any help. Or this is the guide how to create a press release. Here's what you can do here where you can upload your press release for like different frameworks, you know. And
yeah,
we do have a chat with our founders. We try to keep them all in one group. So if something interesting comes up in communications, or Zamir, our founder and GP, if he found something that might be useful for them, he always share it in a chat.
Tell us a little bit about your fund. I know I've done my research, but I'd love the listeners to know a little bit about Vibranium.
Well, we are a small fund. As I mentioned earlier, we invest in seed stage startups, SaaS startups. Of course, it's important for them to have a US HQ. That's number one thing. Seven portfolio companies, and we invested in two funds. If, you know, we saw and spotted something that is very interesting, okay, maybe the startup doesn't meet really some requirements that we have, okay, we're going to take a look, we're going to have a conversation, and then we're going to make the final decision and start everything.
And you mentioned, Galina, that they need to have, like, having a United States headquarters is important for the founders. I'm guessing, if I remember correctly, on your website, you did mention you're a global fund, right? Which means you're helping founders, I'm guessing, also move to the States and really relocate and essentially, what's the word? Stitch them into the American ecosystem. So what's that journey like for you? Because I know when we spoke last time, you mentioned that when founders move to the States, their expectations need to be reset. The media here doesn't operate the same way in their own countries. You probably need to send 100 emails to TechCrunch before they even, you know, get in touch with you. You know that better than me. So talk to us about that, those relocation efforts. Like, how do you work with founders to ease that transition into United States and help with their communication and PR efforts?
Oh, that's my favorite topic.
Because
I like this program so much.
Yeah.
We are helping founders. We have this soft landing program. We had two actually already, one last year and another one we finished this year. In the beginning, we help SaaS founders, you know, SaaS startups. Also, there are some requirements that they have to meet because we choose around 50, you know, out of 100 that are applying. We do help them to, not to move, but to prepare everything for the smooth process of relocating to the United States. So in this program, we have experts from different fields, from communications, from marketing, from legal firms and stuff like that. That is also one of the most important thing. Also people who can consultate them on visa types and how to relocate your pets and what the kindergarten to choose for your child. So we cover everything. because and also some experts, they cover very important for founders thing, networking in Silicon Valley, because there are so many red flags that a new founder just can't spot right away. We try to give them as much information as they need. Mm-hmm. And of course, after the program is complete, we have demo day where they pitch their projects to potential investors.
Yeah.
And of course, we don't say goodbye right away. We have also a chat. We love chats.
Yeah.
With them. And the same thing applies when we see opportunities, when we see something interesting that might help them through their journey, then we also send it. And some of them stay in touch with our experts, you know, if they need any advice or they want to use their services. It's also very helpful. We have some very interesting cases, and we track mm-hmm. the number of people who actually, like in the beginning of the program, they were like, okay, yes, we are willing to move to the United States. By the end of the program or a few months later, some of them change their mind, and it's a normal thing. It's mm-hmm. okay to change your mind mm-hmm. because it's a big step. You're analyzing everything. Is it worth it or not for your business, for your family? Because most of them are moving with their families.
Yeah.
And some of the startups, they're just in the process of preparing documents, and they're actually moving.
It's a big
some
step.
Startups already moved. So yeah, I love to see great cases. Yeah. And when Zamir shares a message, a startup just texted him that he got his visa, the type that he wanted, because of our experts and advice that we gave him. I think it's something that, I don't know, makes you feel really good.
it's making me feel good. I can only imagine what it would do for you. That's really nice. And I do want to point something on, Galina, is that building a startup isn't just, the startup becomes your life, and mm-hmm. it's not just a 9-to-5 or a thing that you do for 6 hours. It becomes who you are after one point. And the fact that you have an empathetic approach to not just answer their startup questions, but also help them figure out the other elements of their family and how everything would tie in together. To mm-hmm. me, as a founder myself, that would be a huge value proposition if I was looking to move to the States and if I had your team to support me. And if you are bringing up the topic of, hey, let's talk about daycare centers for your kids since you'll be moving to, like, that is such an empathetic approach. I just wanted to mm-hmm. point that out, that it's very, what's the word? Kind of you guys to think through that and not just limit your capabilities and platform capabilities to just branding and PR, right? Like it's a very fascinating piece there.
Yeah. And communications, just a little addition here. When it comes to communications and marketing, they're also an important part of the soft landing program, because everything in the United States when it comes to communications and public relations, things work a little bit different than in Europe even. And we try to make them feel that it's okay to invest your time, that it's okay, mm-hmm. that it's not going to happen right away, that it's okay to wait a little bit. Just don't give up. It's not going to be silence from journalists forever. You're going to get something one day, of course. You just have to be patient and try. Yep. And we're just going to give them a few tips how to do that, what is the best way to use that, so they can be prepared and they can always ask any questions if they have.
In your chat, right? In your 200 different
chats.
In our
chat.
So I have a tactical question for you, Galina. When I was talking to one of the previous guests, his name is Oliver from In Motion Ventures based in the UK, he mm-hmm. told me something very interesting, because I asked him, Oliver, how do you anticipate the needs of your portfolio founders? How do you know what they'll need? They're not going to email you every day. And most of the times when a founder needs something, they typically, from what I've been told, they'll go to their lead investor and say, hey, I need mm-hmm. X. Do you need someone who can help me? In mm-hmm. your case, Galina, I know there's chats. I'm guessing it's a Slack or something similar. But mm-hmm. other than, you know, live chats, how do you and your team anticipate the needs of your portfolio founders? You know, how do you know what they might need today versus I don't know, 2-3 months later? And is it just a lot of back and forth communication? How do you keep track of that?
Well, it's actually back and forth communication, I would say, because I personally, I do have this approach that I ask them like, hi guys, what is happening in your company? Do you have any interesting products that you're launching? Just give us an update. Sometimes I have a call with founders and we just go through what potentially might be interesting. And then I just do a follow up because it's not usually, they can say, okay, we're planning to launch a new product, but we're not sure when it's going to be yet. Maybe 2 weeks from now, maybe 1 month from now. So sometimes it takes time also, but I prefer to have a call with them. And I basically, when I have something, if I'm looking for a comment, I also know, okay, I see this comment that the journalist is asking, like a journal request. And I already know which startup I'm going to ask for a comment if they're ready, because it fits their profile better. So I use messages, I use calls if I need to dive deeper in what is going on and if they close around or they have interesting projects or something new and, I don't know, sign a deal with someone, just something that might, that I might use as an opportunity to pitch to a journalist. So yeah, I use I'm maybe very old school. I like to use emails.
This is really good. And I do want to point this out. So funny enough, Oliver from InMotion Ventures, his past expertise is branding, I believe product launches as well as marketing. What he does is essentially a little bit of what you do. And there's a huge overlap where he sits down with his portfolio companies and then has those deep discussions about marketing and branding. What I told him, Galina, was that the fact that he is using his marketing chops to help the portfolio companies is great, not because of his skill set only, but also because of the context. You know, he's literally from the fund that backed the startup. So he obviously did his due diligence on the startup. So he already has that context on what the startup is and what they're doing, who are the key members, et cetera. Imagine that versus the startup coming to America, in your case, hiring a PR agency from outside the fund. That agency needs to come in, learn about the startup, about the people in the team, the context, whereas you already have that context because you are part of the fund, right? So I think it's a very smart way of helping out the startups as fast as possible with as less overhead as possible because everyone's incentives are aligned, you know?
Yeah, it's very, I agree with the, what was the name of the person who was before
Oliver.
On the, Oliver, yes. It's all, it's very important because, you know, like you already know not everything, but almost everything about the startup and how the processes are organized. So maybe you can give a little advice or navigate them, but it's also important to keep in mind that the person who works in the fund and responsible for communication is not a part of the startup because on top of helping founders, you know, for example, I also have a job to bring out what is happening in our fund, you know, so I have also like two parallels. Okay, founders and our fund. That's what I'm doing. I'm trying not, I don't really like the word to promote, but to gain visibility, you know, for our fund and for portfolio companies as well. So when startups hire, there are some really good PR firms out there. I personally know very professional ones, but they're also like little ones that give you this. I could tell so many things about them that they try because every startup, when he applies for investment, a part of checking is also we check media visibility, like the history, if the startup had any press releases out there in the internet, you know, if it's already, what about the founder? Okay. What about his profile? Is he active on LinkedIn? Okay. If what are the mentions are negative or positive of the startup? Can you find any articles? Okay. If you can find, are they outdated or are they like fresh? And some of the PR firms, they know that And they try to basically sell to startups this package with a few publications on very famous, but not so, I wouldn't say that, not professional outlets. And when I see that, okay, startup was published there, then I probably know that this particular startup used an agency to do that. So to gain a little bit of media presence, at least. I think that it's important to have a person in your team to help with that, because you cannot predict what's going to happen with your startup. Maybe the things will go so fast that you need someone who knows everything, who can control the flow of news, and who can control and just all the contacts. And the person who is responsible for communication as a content holder knows CEO, like everyone. And it has an approach and has an access. Sometimes not all PR firms have an access, but usually they do. But if you need to do it right away, okay, you can always call and you can always reach it. If they choose this approach, okay. If they prefer to hire someone and raise a person within the startup, I think it's even better. Or maybe this person in the agency can make a great combination as well if there are finances. If you, if startup can afford it, of course. Mm-hmm. It's also a great thing.
Is there a time in a startup's journey between, I'm guessing, seed and series A, where you have seen them bring in that external PR person? Well, it can be an agency, it can be a person, but when should or when have startups, in your experience, have had success bringing in that external PR person to just lead everything comms and PR related?
I think maybe after series A, I would say.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you have more investment, you have more investors, you have probably more products, and you have more profit. So I think it makes sense if you know the agency, if you know what you're going to get. Because no one can give you guarantees, okay, we're going to give you a publication on TechCrunch. It's not going to work like that. They will try their best. They will try also their best because they have a lot of contact. They, because you're not the only client and they work with many companies and they do have, you know, database of journalists and they have really good connections with them. Of course, that you might not have. It's always up to journalist whether or not he wants to go with this article or not interview.
So much power. Journalists have so much power.
But I think that what makes content interesting, because sometimes what you think is interesting might not be really interesting for them. And they think, okay, if I'm reading TechCrunch, what would be interesting for readers to read? Sorry. So they try to think the other way. I love to read TechCrunch and I love articles that they have. It's always interesting to read. It's never boring.
And whenever I read, there's that little circle at the top right that keeps filling up as you scroll down. It's like they gamified the entire reading process. Every time I'm reading, I'm like, oh, I gotta read fast. Anyway, but that's a great point. That is a great point, which brings me to one thing I wanted to really ask is a success story that you've had at Vibranium. You know, talk to us about maybe that one time a founder got that, you know, exposure, or a founder was very successful because of what you and your team had done. Super happy to dig into that.
Well, maybe I can tell you first our story. okay, I call it my personal success story because, you know, everyone wants to be featured at TechCrunch. It was my personal professional dream. I know that it might sound for seasoned communication specialists, like there, it's nothing, but still it was my dream, and I really wanted Vibranium VC to be mentioned and, you know, just have this opportunity to be there. And I just found there was like a thing called investor surveys. So I was like digging, you know, doing my research. I'm like Sherlock Holmes. I think, you know, when you're a communication specialist, you can find any contact, almost any, but still you have this set of skills that help you to find any person on Twitter, just trying to dig deeper. So I found this opportunity and I sent an email to the journalist, you know, just like an intro, and I think it was a really good pitch. So I send it. Okay, no reply. I did a courteous follow-up 3 days after. Still no reply. And I'm like,
Oh no.
okay, yeah. I'm like, okay, happens. You know, I didn't really have big expectations on that. And a month after, I get a reply from the journalist. If we want to jump into a September issue of this investor interviews, and I'm like, okay, of course, we're gonna do that, and we prepared our answers, send it. And on September 1st, I remember I opened TechCrunch and I saw our company and Zamir's interview, and it was
Nice.
really, yeah, it was a very satisfying moment, I would say, for me. When we talk about our founders, we try to find something that might be a good fit for them. Of course, we know that they don't have a lot of time, but they always ready to invest if they see that this might be an interesting opportunity. So there's a few articles in outlets, not big ones as TechCrunch or Business Insider, but still it helps them to gain this exposure, and it's definitely a plus for them.
If they see that you have a track record of getting on BI and TC, Business Insider and TechCrunch, you are the expert. But I think it's a matter of the media companies also seeing the level of diligence that you bring to them. So, because if I know that someone does their due diligence well, in this case, Galina, and she's trying to talk to me, I'd be like, oh, yeah, let me talk to her. Maybe she has a story for me. It's just not another startup. It's Galina's startup, you know? So maybe over time, I don't know, maybe Fast Company will be like, they'll reach out to you. Like, Galina, what's you know any startups that we can write about? You never know.
Oh, I wish it was like that. I was like, okay, sure, yes, I have this list. But yeah, unfortunately, it's not. I always also get upset sometimes because I think that you're trying so hard and you're sending so many pitches and they're not the same. You know, it's not copy paste thing. Even journalists from TechCrunch, you try to reach them out with different pitches about one thing. About, okay, there's outline, you know, and one news that you want to cover, and you're trying to find a perfect angle because you do your research, you find what journalist is covering, what is his style, and just, yeah, if he's basically covering the subject or not. Because on TechCrunch, it's a good thing that they, of course, they explain, okay, this is Ellen, for example, and she's covering this and that. But sometimes you can see Ellen covering completely different topic, which was not listed in her bio on the TechCrunch. So you also try to do your research, and it's like you're keeping so much information about everyone.
Yeah, that's
And the
just one
journalist,
reporter for one publication.
exactly.
Wow.
And I'm going on
Interesting.
Twitter and I use this particular hashtag that helps to find requests from journalists. And when I'm just scrolling, there's like never ending scroll, never ending. And there are different requests from, for example, we need experts who can comment on the decline of hedgehogs in the United Kingdom. And then you can see, okay, we need another expert who can, you know, comment on what is happening in venture world at the moment. So you have to go through hundreds, I'm not kidding, to
No,
find
I
something.
believe you.
Yeah, so it's time consuming.
Yeah, no, I can fully understand. Learning point for me, I didn't know that when reaching out to a reporter or an author, you need to kind of understand their style and the topics that they typically write on and what publications they are a part of. And that's just one reporter. And when you're pitching the same startup and or the same story, you sometimes have to pitch it in different ways to the same person over time if they didn't respond to you the first or second time. Going that is tough.
It's tough. And even if you
Yeah,
get
no, it's
no
crazy.
from the journalist, like for example, I had one reply like, we're not interested. I'm like, okay,
Oof.
thank you for responding at least. I know that you're out there, saw my email. Okay, thank you. That okay, you're not interested at the moment, but okay, maybe in the future.
One of the questions I wanted to ask you, Galina, is as you're looking into 2024, how do you intend to enhance your VC platform capabilities? Staying true to Vibranium's brand image, how do you want to upgrade how you help your founders over the next year or 2 or 3 years while still staying within the comms and PR space?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I guess what I see that if you have more portfolio companies, then you have more opportunities. And maybe I hope that our portfolio companies will launch new products and they hit new milestones that will give us an opportunity to expose it, you know, and to share it in the angle that will be beneficial for them, of course, you know. I'm just looking forward to that, because I know that everyone wants to be featured, and I also like podcasts a lot. And our portfolio companies, they're not really actively participating yet. So maybe there's something I want to do with them, you know, not me personally hosting, but helping them through the platforms, you know, to have this conversation, to share their experience or their vision on something that might be very interesting. So, yeah, I just hope that they will prosper.
Yeah.
And if they will prosper, there's something for me to always, I will always have something to write about. So
I love that. I love that. Everybody wins. That's great. Danya, this was so, so fun talking to you. I don't often talk to a lot of folks who work with communications only and the things that surround it. Like you're very committed to, you know, brand, PR, communications, and innovation, and then tying all those together. And you spend a lot of clearly time, energy, and effort, and a large part of your life surrounding that space, right? I don't often get to talk to a lot of people like that. So this was very eye-opening, enlightening, and very fun to see how close of a relationship you maintain with your portfolio founders. Because as a founder, I can tell you, at 1 a.m. when I'm having a mini panic attack because I'm not sure how to do X or Y, and I know I can reach out to someone through your chat, someone at Vibranium or a fund like that, that is what would keep me calm, knowing that I have someone who can help me and I'm not alone. And I feel like you guys are slowly nailing that formula, if you haven't already. And it's just so empowering to see. So thanks so much for sharing your story with us today.
It was a lovely conversation. Galina. Thank you so much, Mash.
Hell yeah. But before you go, I will ask you our rapid fire round of questions.
Okay.
I ask you a question and you tell me what comes to mind. They're a bit weird or quirky, but just bear with me. Okay. I'll start. Favorite type of coffee?
Latte.
Nice. A mocha.
Cappuccino. I would say cappuccino and espresso. I like coffee in general, not iced coffee. Nice.
What? I see that. So how many cups of coffee do you have in a day? Like caffeine-wise, like it doesn't affect you?
Well, no. I used to work for an Italian company, so I used to have so many espressos per day, it's not affecting me. I have an immune system.
Were you like testing the coffee or?
No, I mean, it's just when I worked in Italian company, we just had, you have first espresso, cappuccino in the morning, then you have espresso after lunch, then you have probably one at five, and you sleep like a baby in the evening. Trust me, I can drink 3 coffees per day and I will be sleeping really good.
On that's okay. I'm the opposite. So I had a coffee today, it was decaf. Messed up the oat milk and it messed up my day. But usually I'll have a coffee, Galina, at 9 a.m. If it has 2 shots of caffeine, I can't sleep till 2 a.m.
Literally. Oh my God.
14 hour caffeine. So anyway, very price efficient though. So I don't have to have much coffee each day. True. But anyway. Okay. If you could pick one superpower, Galina, what would it be?
Healing people. It's the superpower that I would love to have.
That is so nice. Healing them.
Through my hands, maybe.
Oh, no, of course. Not just with the mind, right? Like I'm healing you. Healing them, like physical pains, right? Like if someone breaks a leg, like that.
Oh, even emotional. I think even now we are in this era when, you know, your mental health is very important. You have to prioritize it, because if you're not taking care of your mental health, you won't be able to live a normal life.
That is extremely, extremely important. And as the platform person at Vibranium, if you understand that, your portfolio founders are very well taken care of, which is great. That's beautiful. Go-to comfort food. What's your go-to comfort food whenever you feel stressed or you just want to relax a bit very quickly?
I don't know. First thing that comes to my mashed potatoes.
Nice.
It's not fast to cook though, but I don't know. Edamame beans. Do you know them?
I know edamame. Yes, but I haven't had them in a long time. Actually, I have.
You probably do. I don't like like chips, and I'm not really a fan of that. So I try to eat healthy. Nice. But if I have something and I need like a quick bite, that's what I have always in my fridge.
Oh, okay. Interesting. I think, my partner, she once put edamame beans and she mixed it with, I'm forgetting. It's the beans, you know, like those chickpeas.
Ah, chickpeas. Ooh.
And when you mix edamame beans with chickpeas, it tastes very rich, but it doesn't feel like you're having edamame beans. It just tastes so rich. And if your life was a movie, what genre would it be?
Drama with comedy elements.
Very nice. The best way to live life.
Yeah, just something documentary, if I could say that. But not drama. No, I don't want to be dark. No, definitely. Yeah. Just let's have like a comedy, a good one that gives you a good aftertaste.
A good aftertaste. No one's ever told me that on this pod. Good aftertaste. Interesting. Mine's a bit more like a bit dark. I think I like mystery because I look at a lot of mystery. Netflix, it's like you never know what's going to happen next. It gives you a lot of anxiety, but it also lets you see forward to the next day. You know, that's how I see it. But a little bit of comedy would be good from time to time.
Yeah, we need some comedy in our lives sometimes.
We do, desperately. I do for sure. And then last question, favorite way to spend a lazy Sunday afternoon?
You just mentioned that I love to watch Netflix and maybe read a book and have a good tea. I also
all at the
drink
same time?
Tea.
Nice.
I'm a tea drinker also. And yeah, just my way. I love documentaries on Netflix, but I'm not going to spend the whole day watching it. I'm getting tired after a few hours.
Documentaries of what? Like historical figures? Like documentaries of
no,
what?
No, crimes. Crime mysteries is my favorite.
You don't have to watch a doc. After this podcast, I'll send you a few recommendations. The only genre I love is mystery. Mm-hmm. And I found three shows on Netflix. I'll tell you them after the pod. It's so good. And you never know what's going to happen next.
Send it to me. Hold your mind. I need your recommendations. I love it.
You will not regret it. I told my mom to watch it. She was like, Mash, I finished the whole season in 4 days. I'm like, don't you work. Anyway.
Okay. I'm looking forward to the next weekend.
Exactly. But jokes aside, Galina, hyper happy to have you on with me. It was amazing. Thank you so much for spending this lovely evening with me. And I wish to have you again in the future.
Thank you so much for your time. It was really nice talking to you. Have a great
feelings mutual
week.
Yeah, you too. Bye.
Bye.
I told you she delivered. This was so fun to make. One thing I super admire about Vibranium is their commitment to really, really support their founders, not just on the tactical side of things like communications, but also to really make sure that their founders are in the right headspace as they're building out their companies from day one. And I really admire Galina because she was so honest and direct with her responses. And that's exactly the kind of personality you'd want on your VC fund team working on communications because, hey, she's a great communicator, right? If you want to get in touch with her, I'll put her details in the description below. And if you want to watch the podcast video, head on over to YouTube and type in Hire CMO Podcast. That's HIRECMO space podcast. And look for Galina's episode. I'd love to hear how you felt about this episode, so please leave a review on the podcast platform you're using, or just, hey, tweet at me at HIRECMO on Twitter. Bye-bye.